The Cultured Meat Symposium is back in San Francisco on October 28th and 29th, 2022. This year, the theme of the event is creativity and commerce. Learn more and register at www.cms2022.com. Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Show. We're excited to have Dr. Tim Olson as the guest for today's episode. Tim joined Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany in 2020 as head of commercial for the Cultured Meat Program. His goal is to commercialize technologies that enable large-scale, cost-effective, and sustainable production of cultured meat and seafood products. Previously, Tim directed laboratory operations and led development of bioinks at Alevi, 3D bioprinting company. Tim then held the senior scientist position of the process and product development team at Rooster Bio. His skill sets include stem cell culture optimization, media development, and scaling manufacturing in bioreactor systems. Tim then transitioned into commercial operations at Rooster Bio as the Northeast USA and Europe account manager to leverage his technical skill set to focus on bringing solutions to customers who are working on bringing regenerative medicine products to the clinic and the market. Tim received his PhD in bioengineering from Clemson University in 2015 and sits on the external advisory board for the Department of Biomedical Engineering at the College of New Jersey, his undergraduate alma mater. I had a great chat with Tim and was fortunate enough to be able to meet him in person at CMS 21 earlier this year. Let's jump right into the episode. Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Show. We're excited to have Tim Olson on the call today. Tim, welcome to the show.
Alex, thank you for having me. Super excited to be here with you and talk about all things related to cultured meat.
Tim, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I am the global director of the Cultured Meat Program at Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany. In the North America region, we're known as MilliporSigma. And like most working in the space, I have a bit of an interesting entrance. So I am an engineer by training, and I got my bachelor's in biomedical engineering from the College of New Jersey, then moved on, did my PhD in bioengineering at Clemson University in South Carolina. And my research was all about blood vessel tissue engineering, as I was funded by the American Heart Association. And we were using a bottom-up engineering approach to build blood vessels from cellular spheroids. So what that means is lots of cell culture, scaling processes in the lab, and developing different fabrication techniques. So I have an interesting tangent here for how I really got my first taste of cultured meat. It was really my first year in grad school working in Frank Alexis's lab at Clemson. He was trained in Bob Langer's lab at MIT. And he approached me with a grant call at the USDA for manufacturing meat. This was 2013. So he said, go to the grocery store, pick up some chicken breast, some steak, ground beef, sausage, and I sliced the meat up in the lab, did some histological examination to look at the structure, measure protein content, and some of the mechanical properties like stiffness of the tissues. And the idea was that we were material scientists and engineers, so we know the structure, protein content, mechanical properties. Why couldn't we make the meat in the lab? We did not get the grant. So I continued on all of my blood vessel work in the lab for my PhD, and that was 2013. And now here we are in closing out 2021, and I'm working on cultured meat. So after grad school, I moved from Clemson up to Philadelphia, which is originally where I'm from. And I joined a 3D bioprinting startup called Alevi, where we were working on standardizing bioinks and tools for manufacturing human tissues and organs. Super small startup. I think it was around 5 or 6 people when I joined. They actually recently got acquired by another 3D printing company called 3D Systems. Next, I worked at a company in Frederick, Maryland called Rooster Bio, where we were experts with radically simplifying the use of human mesenchymal stem cells for the commercialization of therapeutic technologies. In short, we were all about manufacturing the best possible MSC and the complementing media to scale production so that way anyone in the regenerative medicine space could plug stem cells into their process. And here is really where I started to cut my teeth on the tech side. So I was a senior scientist in the lab, so I was doing stem cell isolations from bone marrow, fat, umbilical cords, doing media formulation development, bioreactor feed development, scale up in stir tank bioreactor systems, and product launches. So taking something out of the lab and bringing it to the market, which is, you know, always exciting to do. Then it was time for me to move on from the lab. And at the time, Margot Connor was the CEO at Rooster Bio, and she would pop her head into the lab as she was leaving the office sometimes and say, "Hey, how are things going? Tell me about what you're working on." And after a few times, she said, "Hey, you know what? Come to my office tomorrow and let's have a chat." And she essentially said she'd love for me to try out a commercial position at Rooster Bio to more or less leverage my technical skill set to work with partners and customers. And at the time, we were just getting ready to start doing a Series B at the company and going for global commercialization. So the timing was interesting. And it was interesting because if you would have told me in grad school that I would be a suitcase carrying business guy, I would have said that you're crazy. But I ended up trying it out and I loved it. And I knew our tech so well and easily understood what our customers were trying to accomplish. So I was able to easily go in and identify bottlenecks, challenges, then offer solutions to our customers in the form of our products and processes. Something else that was quite interesting along that journey at Rooster Bio is that probably around the years 2017, 2018, we started getting contacted by some of the early cultured meat startups. And sure enough, they were asking about cell culture media. How do we reduce the cost of goods for production and the actual media itself? How do we drive media productivities, which is really how do you get higher yields? So more cells produced per liter of cell culture media consumed. And then, of course, scaling production. So at the time, we were really experts of cell manufacturing, and that's what all the culture meat companies wanted to learn about. So perhaps that was a little bit of foreshadowing for myself. So after working for more than 4 years with Rooster Bio, I had never actually applied for another job. And so I saw an opportunity that came up on the Merck LinkedIn page for a job that I really couldn't refuse. And it was with Merck KGaA to head up the commercial program for cultured meat. And so sure enough, there are lots of the same technological challenges in the cultured meat industry as the regenerative medicine industry, which is where I came from. So in short, I really already spoke the language of what these companies were trying to accomplish. So I was able to really just jump in headfirst into the deep end.
Wow. And I'm just thinking about that 2013 when you were working on that cultured meat. I guess my first question is like, what did some of the other folks in the lab think when you were doing that? Was it strange or not?
It was pretty abstract at the time, even for myself, to have my PhD advisor approach me and say, "Hey, look, we're going to make meat or we're going to submit this grant proposal." And it wasn't so uncommon that my professor was pretty early in his career. So he was applying for grants all the time. So funding was always quite interesting. And being material scientists and engineers, I guess it wasn't so abstract considering we were already trying to do tissue engineering for blood vessels and other tissues. And so when you think about it and boil it down to its simple terms, meat is cells, structure, or protein, right? And if we're material scientists and have a very solid understanding of these things, then we should be able to manufacture it. And so when I helped support and get the generated data for this project, it opened my eyes into, hey, look, there are other things that this technology that we're working on developing can be applied to, like cultured meat. And another experience that I really had while I was doing my graduate studies working in cardiovascular tissues, sometimes I would have to go to the slaughterhouse. And if you've never been to a slaughterhouse, it's quite an eye-opening experience for multiple reasons. So primarily, I would go there to get different tissues. And when you go, you have to schedule yourself to attend because they do the slaughters a couple times a week. Of course, there's always USDA representatives that are there to monitor the process, but it's never pleasant. So, I mean, not to get into too many of the details, but when you'd go, you'd essentially say, okay, these are the tissues of interest that you need. So sometimes it was cardiovascular tissue. Sometimes it was something like a liver. And it was just demoralizing and depressing to see how the process is done and where meat comes from. And so those were some of the early seeds for me to start thinking about cultured meat. And I'm a huge animal lover. So it does hurt my heart to see animals suffer. So I think going through that experience, going through grad school, getting exposed and working on this grant and being able to go to the slaughterhouse to actually see where food comes from, is something that was a huge mark on me. And I mean, even till today, I still think about those things.
If that grant had gone through, how do you think that your kind of career path would have changed? Do you think you would be actively working? Well, I guess you are currently actively working on Cultured Meat, but...
Would there have been a 6-year gap, right? I think that's something that I'm very passionate about. I love tissue engineering. I love food science. Another fun fact, I did do biomedical engineering as my undergrad, but I was also contemplating at the same time, there was a community college in New Jersey that had a new food science program, and I elected not to do it. And there are so many little clues and tracks along the way where I could have very easily gone that direction, but for some reason I did not. And I went down the engineering route. But the good thing is that a lot of the tools, the skill sets, the themes, and the technologies that are involved for cultured meat, everything that I did along the way, the engineering, undergrad, tissue engineering specifically in grad school, working on developing alternatives and replacements and new technologies for human tissue and organ replacement, all of it is directly applicable to what folks are working on today for cultured meat. Rather than making a human muscle or tissue, the same tools and tool belt, if you will, being applied to animal cell culture.
Cool. And so I want to kind of later get back to the different startup experiences you've had and really compare that to working at a company like Merck KGaA. But maybe first tell me a little bit about the program that you are currently involved with at Merck KGaA and how that team contributes to the cultured meat industry.
Yeah, so Merck KGaA is a leading supplier to the biopharma industry. And through our expertise in cell culture media, bioprocessing tools and tech, we're very laser focused on developing products and services that will enable safe cultured meat and seafood production at scale. When you look across the value chain for cultured meat, I think of cells, media, scaffolds, and then of course the bioprocessing tools like bioreactors and facilities, if you will. And internally, we have two programs going. One is for scaffolds and the other is for cell culture media. And our scaffold program is a bit more internal right now, hasn't been exactly public quite yet, but it will be in 2022. So everyone look out for news on that. Our cell culture media program is more mature. And over the last few years, we have developed 3 key offerings that we think are going to be important, at least for the early days of this industry. And the first offering is what we call customer formulation manufacturing at scale to support prototypes and go-to-market launch. Then there is new formulation development in collaboration with our team. So our team can host development projects where we'll work in collaboration with other industry startups to build and optimize and bring to them the formulations of the future that they want to use for their manufacturing processes. And then the last one is standard basal cell culture media manufacturing at scale. And maybe let me tell you a little bit about why we are going that route. So while it is exciting that this industry is growing so quickly, there are of course challenges. And our team is really laser focused on providing the enabling cell culture media technologies. And at this time, sustainable, cost-effective solutions don't exactly exist. So there are folks that are still using fetal bovine serum in their manufacturing processes. And of course, in the future, we'd like this to change. So whether you're working with beef, chicken, pork, salmon, shrimp, cell culture media is really the number one topic of all of these startups today, as it is the key for generating biomass to feed their manufacturing processes. The cell culture media not only affects their expansion potential in generating the biomass, but it also impacts product quality. So currently groups are leveraging pharma versions of media as their starting point, but they're really suboptimal. They're too costly for this industry while also competing for the same supply chain as pharma, which can pose problems down the road. Most importantly, I mentioned that a lot of companies still rely on fetal bovine serum to support their cell culture, which is not sustainable for many reasons. Part of our job over the last few years was to intimately work with all of the key players in the space in the industry. And over the last 18 months or so, the team really determined that shifting to a food and feed grade supply chain will accelerate their path to the formulation of the future. At the Good Food Conference, actually this year, we heard Mark Post and Uma Valetti, the CEOs of Mosa Meat and Upside Foods, they both commented on the need for a shift in supply chain and the opportunity that was there. And the idea is that these formulations of the future that we hope to be manufacturing for customers in the industry will be optimized, they'll be cost effective, animal component free, and made from a food grade supply chain that our team internally is aspiring to build over the next few years. So along the way, we are developing the R&D capabilities, specifically high throughput screening, to test different food and feed grade raw materials that we've already generated some early promising data for. And ultimately, this is going to be driving new formulation development over the years to come for our customers. So really, at the end of the day, we really tried to listen to the industry and we're taking action. And this should really enable the company to gain an early lead in the market with our existing technologies while we build out that food grade raw material supply chain. And we really call this the raw material toolbox from which we can build any cell culture media formulation. That brings me back to the three offerings that we're going for. So I mentioned the customer IP manufacturing, right? So this would be, in simple terms, hi, I'm Alex. I am working on this awesome chicken cell culture media formulation, and I need a trusted supply chain and manufacturing partner. Your company manufacture the media for us at scale. And we'd say, absolutely, we'd be happy to do so either as a one-off or even under supply agreement if you're looking to secure future supply. The second would be what we call the new formulation development. So they'll be in collaboration with our company. And the idea is that the development work would happen in our labs. We would agree upon a high level set of experiments, after which we would love to have an optimized formulation that is ready for scaled manufacturing. And then we would enter into a supply agreement to provide that cell culture media formulation for you. But then the last offering that I mentioned was the standard basal manufacturing at scale. The idea is that lots of companies are relying on historically known formulations. So think DMEM F12, which is Dubelco's modified Eagles medium. And truthfully, this cell culture medium has been around since before I was born and hasn't really been optimized. This particular media formulation is being used by somewhere around 60 to 70% of companies today. And this was a data point that was generated by the Good Food Institute earlier in 2021. And partially why folks are going this route is that DMMF12 works across a lot of different cell types and species. And groups are just wanting something to get started, and they want to add to it their species and cell type specific cocktail of proteins, goodies, and growth factors. Groups are using DMMF12 to get started, but then they want to optimize it. They want to optimize it in a couple different ways. One is they would like to make it more optimal for their cell type and maybe their species. So they'll come to us and say, hey, look, we like this particular DMMF12 formulation. Can you take these three things out? And then can you add these three things in? And that's something that we can do in a custom manner and manufacture quick prototypes using a process called Fast Track internally at our company, where we can turn around quick prototypes in a dry powder media format. And that enables companies to quickly test any candidate formulations that they might like. And should there be success, then we have a direct path to scaling up the production of that particular formulation. So DMMF12 has somewhere between 50 and 60 raw materials in it. And the idea is that we want to start taking prioritized materials from that formulation, sourcing, testing, and qualifying them in a food grade way, and then implementing them into manufacturing so that way we can offer that to the customer. That's very important for the industry for a couple of reasons. One is the food grade raw materials will be suitable for use in cultured meat and seafood manufacturing. Two is that food grade and even feed grade raw materials in general are more cost effective. And then three, it's important to get away from the pharma raw material supply chain so that way the industry is not exactly competing for the same resources. And so altogether, our huge R&D focus over the next couple of years is to build this food grade raw material supply chain for an industry desired formulation, DMMF12. And should we demonstrate success, we will be able to apply all of these learnings to any cell culture media formulation. DMMF12 is industry desired. It's mainly salts, sugars, vitamins, amino acid, which are really common amongst the industry used formulations today. So the idea is that our contribution to the industry will be on the supply chain side and then providing a path to scaled manufacturing.
To help kind of grasp my head around volumes. What kind of volumes are we talking about when we are talking about this large-scale manufacturing? Any kind of ballpark numbers that you could throw out?
So that's a great question about scale and where companies are at. And maybe I'll tell you a little bit about some of the signals that I'm seeing, which will lend insight into that. Upwards of about a year and a half ago, companies were typically buying off-the-shelf product, right? So even liquid cell culture media, which we tend to coach companies to get over to dry powder media for logistics and cost reasons as soon as possible. And so companies were buying enough so that way they could do maybe some 2D cell cultures. You know, we're talking 10 or 20 liters and maybe some small benchtop scale bioreactor systems. And there were reports of some folks doing 50 liters and more. But where things are going, Alex, as I kind of reflect on 2021, more and more companies are approaching us and saying, hey, look, we have a handful of candidate cell culture media formulations. We'd love to do some quick prototype testing in a dry powder format. And we would leverage what we call fast track. Fast track internally for Merck is anywhere from 3 to maybe 10 kilograms of cell culture media. And the idea is that enables companies to get their candidate formulations, test them out in their processes, and it'll be anywhere from 500 to 1,000 liters. So sufficient testing can be done with that quantity. And the idea is that should they have success with one of their candidate formulations, they would scale to large scale production. And large scale production for 2022, what I'm speculating is going to be thousands of kilograms. So think metric tons of product, which is super exciting to hear. And part of why I think that is really happening is there are a lot of companies that are heading towards regulatory filings. There are a lot of companies that are scaling to 1,000 and 2,000 liter bioreactor systems, if not more. And they're all starting to think about, okay, the volumes that we need are going to skyrocket in the next couple of years, being 2022, 2023, and beyond. And they're really looking to secure supply and scale manufacturing. And I think that we're all aware of the capacity challenges around the world. So companies are really trying to get a head start on this and plan. What I'm hoping to see in 2022 is companies start to get their regulatory filings approved, which means that along the way, they're going to have to do what I think of and call engineering runs. So they're going to have to show their scale manufacturing process is reproducible and can be controlled. And so that means these companies are going to have to run their scaled bioreactors and have a secure supply to do so and a reproducible supply. And that's where we come in. So we can help companies do those rapid prototype testing in a dry powder format and then scale people up to help enable them do their first, we'll call them pilot production runs.
Great. And that from the initial phases to later phases, that really helps put it in context. When we're thinking about scale and the fact that we are planning to get there, would you say that some of the timelines that we're looking at within the cultured meat industry are like overhyped?
Considering that I've seen pitches from companies from years ago that said they would have product on the market in 2021, I think that we can say that some timelines have been overhyped. But having said that, I think that everyone is super bullish on the industry. We like to say that the industry isn't science fiction anymore. Their prototypes are here. There is a regulatory approval over in Singapore with EatJust, and we can essentially be promised that in 2022, there will be more. Those approvals are going to really provide fuel for the industry. That's going to make some of the people that doubted things change their tune a bit. And I think that you can't discount the bullish investor sentiment as well. We're seeing record financing rounds for this industry. And most of it, sure enough, is going to be going towards capital expenditures and building out the facilities, but then also doing first commercial pilot launches and really getting a product onto the shelves for the world to taste. I think that we'll have some interesting feedback from consumers and how they see this product being incorporated into their lives.
I wanted to ask you really at what stage should some of these startups get in touch with Merck KGaA? But if you do have a program that does have a smaller supply that they could start working with right away, it really seems like as soon as they get in the lab, that's a good time to start the conversation with Merck KGaA. Would you say that's true?
I think that's exactly correct. And even from my days doing product development at my old job at Rooster Bio, we always coach our partners and our customers to essentially begin with the end in mind. And so what that means for us is, hey, look, if you are planning to do large-scale production, then you should transition away from liquid cell culture media as soon as possible and get over to dry powder media, because in your very large scale commercial production, you're going to be using dry powder media. I really do encourage companies to reach out. We're happy to consult a bit and talk through where you're at and where you're trying to be. And we're happy to provide the recommendations to help enable you to get there, and not only get there, but get there faster.
I'm personally interested in knowing the answer. I don't know if it's fit for a podcast question, but from a bioreactor like liter size, how big have you seen? Is that something you can answer?
I have seen reactors that are north of 1,000 liters.
For cultured meat.
Yes, correct. So that would really be the upstream part where there's the biomass generation. So whether that biomass is going to be put into some sort of unstructured product or carried further to be differentiated downstream, to be determined, and really depends on the product and technology that they're using. One other comment, Alex, on the bioreactors, that's definitely going to be one of the bottlenecks for the industry moving forward. And I think we've even heard the CEO for Eat Just, Josh Tetrick, basically say, you know, 100,000 liter bioreactors don't exactly exist. There's so much innovation that still has to occur to get to the scales that this industry is going to command. So I'm very curious to see who will be the major players on the bioreactor side. Are companies going to come out with technologies that are more standardized that anyone could incorporate, or are they all going to be custom jobs and custom solutions?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I wanted to step back a bit and ask you about your experience at CMS this year. So we recently hosted, I guess, the fourth edition of the Cultured Meat Symposium. How was your experience there?
Great. Yeah, Cultured Meat Symposium 2021 is definitely on my highlight reel when I look back at 2021, for sure, for a couple of reasons. I think that you, Anita, and the organizers really did a fantastic job of getting the community together. And I think for most people, you have to remember that this was their first in-person conference for a few years. And there have been folks that I've been working with in the community for a few years now and have never met them in person. So our company was a sponsor this year. So our regulatory lead, Abena Foley, and our head of R&D at the time, Aletta Schnitzler, we were prepping our booth and meeting with different sponsors before the show started. So we had a little bit of early access and sneak peek. So the energy was building, and I really vividly remember seeing the doors open and seeing all of the attendees come in on the first day. And there was so much positive energy going on, and everyone was just so happy to be there. And I honestly have not spoken that much and to that many people in the course of a couple of days in a long time. I think that the talks were fantastic. The networking was great. Everybody was very high energy. And as I mentioned, I think meeting people in person, face to face, you build different connections, right? And there have been people that I've been working with for a few years, and having that face to face facilitation, we had deeper discussions that led to follow up discussions, which is what conferences are all about. It's networking, it's building relationships, and ultimately getting everybody together in one place and talking about the challenges in the industry. So I think it was a great experience, and definitely look forward to participating in the future.
Thanks for the kudos. And yeah, there was this kind of energy that I think we had either missed or haven't seen in a while, because it had been some time since people were in the same room, like physically together. So that was really exciting to see. I wanted to also ask you about the different startup experiences that you've had, because it seems like you've been in startups of different sizes and stages, and now you're working for an older, larger company. What kind of high level contrast have you seen there?
Great question. I love startups. I love the energy. I love the drive. I love the passion that you see from everybody that's jumping into the same boat and rowing into the same direction. And I'm trying to bring that type of energy to Merck, which is a very large organization. And truth be told, we essentially operate like a startup within the broader Merck umbrella. So internally, along with my team, we do stakeholder alignment, we pitch and educate senior management, we pitch and secure funding, just like a startup might, and we operate on a project and milestone basis. We have a great team. We're very careful about bringing on the best people that are independent self-starters and motivated and live, breathe, and hopefully soon eat cultured meat.
It's definitely something that I've witnessed too. And I remember going to the Silicon Valley Innovation Hub, and it was totally kind of startup atmosphere in this smaller localized subsection of that. And that was definitely cool to see.
Absolutely. And I think, Alex, the exciting thing about what we're doing internally, even though we're a large organization, we work cross-functionally all the time. So we have our cultured meat program, but we interact very much so with our life sciences group, with their manufacturing team, their marketing folks, quality assurance, quality control. And no matter who you talk to internally, they get a smile on their face and brighten up when we talk about cultured meat. Everybody's so intrigued and interested, and it makes it easy to facilitate collaboration because everybody wants to get involved in some way, shape, or form because they think it's just such a cool concept and love the motivation behind it.
You mentioned bioreactor size and design as one of the upcoming challenges within the industry. Is there anything else that you see as a really big challenge to the industry that maybe we're not talking about enough?
I think that there's a huge pressure for companies to get a product out to market, scale their production, and have return on their investment very soon. There are a couple of points to be made there. I think that a challenge is going to be supply chain and manufacturing for sure for these companies that are getting significant financing rounds and looking to get products on the market sooner rather than later. There are companies that you really have to be generous with your timelines in the sense that if you think that you're going to have a product out on the market in 2022, you have to be having your cell culture media supply chain and manufacturing discussions like yesterday. So really getting ahead of the curve, supply chain globally speaking in this COVID world that we live in has been a huge challenge, and it's applicable to all the industries, right? The biotech industry is struggling in that sense as well. So I would really encourage people to think ahead about what they want their manufacturing process to be and start securing supply chain sooner rather than later. I think a challenge, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, is getting over to dry powder media as soon as possible. That is the quickest path and most scalable media form. And the idea is that as these companies are planning out and building their facilities of the future, if you will, you need to think about how you're going to be preparing your media on site. So not only are you going to need this, let's call it a 2,000 liter bioreactor system, you're also going to need a mixer of essentially the equivalent size or larger to prepare your dry powder media, formulate it up, filter it, and get it into your bioreactor system. Having insight and foresight on these processes will just make your life so much easier as you're starting to do your production runs. And these are all things that our company can support cross-functionally with the filtration, the mixers, and things like that. So I encourage companies that might be listening to this, if you're looking for advice, if you're looking for things in addition to just the cell culture media itself, we're happy to help with that as well. And I think one other thing or a challenge that I think about is really on the investment space, what's coming next? There's tons and tons of money being invested into the B2C landscape. So the companies themselves are actually manufacturing the cultured meat or seafood. I was able to connect with one of my longtime colleagues, Steve Molino, just yesterday, actually. He's an impact investor at Clear Current Capital. And we actually lived on the same freshman floor at college. And he actually went the MBA route on the finance side, and I went the PhD route on the science side. And here we are more than 10 years later working together in the same industry, right? And so we oftentimes have discussions on science-related things. You know, he's not a scientist, but he's eager to learn all the time. So I'm happy to talk about it. And I'm always eager to understand how investors think and what they think the future looks like. And one thing that we were agreeing upon is that we're going to be anticipating that investors might be shifting to, okay, we might have investments in a B2C company that's trying to bring a meat product to market, but who will actually be fueling all of these companies that are trying to manufacture it? This is where you start looking at the supply chain. So companies that might be involved in raw materials being the cells, the media, and scaffolding, and maybe even some of the technologies that might be developed on the bioreactor side. So I'm very excited and curious to see how the investment landscape is going to change over the next couple of years, especially as we start seeing companies have success with their soft launches or pilot launches to the market, because the one thing that we know for sure is with those early success stories, demand is going to pick up and volumes are going to be driving through the roof. And so the supply chain at that point will be absolutely critical. So I think it's really important that we start thinking about how to appropriately fund groups that are going to be bringing the supply chain solutions to the industry.
As we begin to wrap up, for those who are either doing research in a lab or startups that are really just starting out, what is the best way for them to get in touch with your team?
Absolutely. We're always open to talk to anybody, whether you're at a company, whether you're a student and just curious about the industry. Check us out. You can Google us. We're Cultured Meat at Merck. You'll find us there. We have a really awesome page that has lots of rich content for you to get an idea of what we're working on. And you can contact me directly via LinkedIn, or feel free to email us at culturedmeat@merckgroup.com. And we'd be happy to have a conversation with you.
Great. And do you have any last insights or thoughts before we wrap up?
I do. So over the last few weeks, you know, as we're getting closer to the end of 2021, I think we can't ignore the fact that this industry is super exciting and it's really poised to have lots of continued momentum into 2022. And I really do hope to see a couple more products hit the market. I think that will be tremendous for the industry. I think it'll validate everything that we're working on. And I really do encourage companies to approach us. We're happy to have conversations. And at the end of the day, we're all in this industry because we want to have larger impact than ourselves and larger than what our companies do. So I really wish everyone a good start to their 2022 and look forward to connecting with everyone soon.
Tim, thank you so much for being on the Future Food Show.
Thanks, Alex.
This is your host, Alex, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
This program was produced by H Media. We'll see you soon.